You are listening to CJN Speaks, Episode 6, the podcast for Cut Chip Newsletter and Ace of Spades. This is JJ Sefton. Today I am joined by a very special guest, one of our co-bloggers, Misanthropic Humanitarian. Ms. Hume, hello, sir. How are you, sir?
Well, I am fine. Good morning, Mr. Sefton, or JJ, as we affectionately call you.
We're going to hit on a couple of subjects today, which will be our last podcast for the year. And the latest seems to be the complete foul-up of the junta with Biden and Walensky and Fauci, with this whole Omicron variant, not really knowing, like everything else in this junta, not really knowing their ass from their elbow, and not having enough tests. And, of course, Biden deflecting the blame either on Donald Trump or on who knows who. But there's just such confusion of what's going on. And yet I'm seeing signals and signs out there that this whole thing is just wearing thin on the population as a whole in general, unless you are someone who is so brainwashed and fearful, like the woman who tried to beat up the 80-year-old guy on the airplane for not wearing a mask while he was eating his food. So the question is the junta pulling out of this thing or trying to find an exit strategy because the entire economy is tanking because of this, along with other things? Or are they afraid of the base that wants to maintain the fear because it's just they're so brainwashed by it? Or do they not want to do this and they just want to keep the pressure on because, you know, it's the best way to keep people repressed and suppressed, as it were?
Well, I think it's all very... They continue to send out mixed messages. We have the Kamala, the San Francisco headhunter, spouting off about, well, we didn't plan, you know, we didn't think of anything that could happen after the Delta variety. And now we've got the CDC cutting down the quarantine from 10 days to 5 days. I think that's a move to keep the business sector happy. Right before we came on, I was reviewing some news pop-ups that come my way, and I see that there's been a record number of flights canceled by a number of different carriers, all because of outages of workforce problems. And then there's been so much bullshit coming out of Washington. Mask works, mask don't work. You need to quarantine this, you need to quarantine that. You need shots. You need boosters. Well, you've got entire NBA teams or football teams, NFL teams that are just, they're losing players left and right. Why? Because they have the Chinese Kung Flu. But I thought they were vaccinated. Yeah, they were, but they have it. So I know two people that have contracted COVID in the last 2 months. One, it was basically a severe head cold and a sore throat. Another friend of mine is in the hospital right now, and he was vaccinated. So I think what it boils down to is nobody in Washington knows what the hell they're doing. You've got conflicting statements from scientists, from doctors. You had one doctor that was kicked off of Twitter for spreading the truth. And I think what it boils down to is it's going to have to be that, you know, if you want to be a Karen and get shot up and get a prick every 6 months, go for it. Wear your frickin' mask, you know, be like the stupid person I saw driving by himself the other day with a mask on in his car. Okay, there's no hope for a person like that. But for the rest of us, if you want to wear masks, if you want to get the prick, go ahead. But let's just go back to normal. There is something to be said for herd immunity.
It's, you know, I will go back, and I don't want to minimize the suffering and the sickness that your friends and people that you know and people that I know that have come down with this virus, whichever variant you want to, you know, Delta, you know, Phi Beta Kappa, whichever the variant du jour happens to be. But the fact of the matter is, every time we've had a virus, whatever the nature of the virus is, we have never shut down society as a response to it. Even in 1918, when we didn't have antibiotics, antivirals, or anything, and when all they had were these ridiculous masks, World War I was still fought. I mean, children still went to school, and millions of people did die from a virus, but that was, you know, that's 100 years ago. But going back to when we were kids, and I'm sure you remember this, when we had this the Hong Kong flu of 1968, I think I was in second grade. Nothing was shut down. I knew kids that had it, and they were sick. They were out sick, and you know, the airlines weren't shut down, businesses weren't shut down, voting, normal voting still went on to the extent that voting ever was normal. And the same thing can be said when Obama, I think during his reign of error, we had the Ebola virus breakout, we had the MERS virus, we had the SARS virus breakout. I think there was another one called chikungunya that came out. Nothing was ever shut down. And literally tens of thousands of people have died from this, not just with this, which they always count as you could be killed in a car accident and they do an autopsy. Oh, the guy had, you know, the guy had a, it was a case of COVID. Well, we'll count that as the cause of death. And that kind of nonsense, the politicization of this in order to keep people afraid, keep people listening to the government. And initially it was either a malice aforethought, either with the Chinese or without the Chinese, or it was one of those crises that the Democrats never let go to waste as the pretext to totally destroy voter integrity. The fig leaf of voter integrity that may have existed in the first place was completely wiped out, and just to try to throw the election. And then they saw that, wow, this is a really great way of not only rigging elections, it's a great way of controlling society. Oh, you don't want to get a shot, or you don't want to do this? Well, then, you know, you don't get to go to work, or you don't get to participate in going to the movies, or you don't get to go to the supermarket, so we just shut you in and seal you off. So there are so many mixed signals. And then I think it was the governor from Connecticut, Ned Lamont, who, you know, he's not exactly a constitutional conservative, to say the least. I mean, he was even admitting, you know, this whole mask thing is a complete crock. It doesn't do anything. When can we get rid of this? But, you know, we're just stuck in this limbo of not knowing which end is up, when we can get back to normal. And there's all this talk, which drives me crazy, of the new normal, quote unquote. So, you know, it's completely fouled up, and something has to be done. The problem is the damage is done, the psychological damage on people over something that really, and again, not to minimize people's suffering, that really is no more serious than a very bad flu, at least that we know of. Yes, people have died from this thing, but can we really trust the numbers coming out of the government, and certainly out of hospitals and medical providers that get a huge cut of money for every case that they chalk up from the government? So they're going to say, oh yeah, cases, this, that, deaths. It's a scam at this point by the government, and then it's the greatest case of mass hysteria that is, I think, has ever befallen humanity that I have ever seen. Now it's a pretext just to control people. If you look what's going on in Europe and look what's going on in Australia, mass protests and the reaction of the government is clamping down on civil rights and throwing people into leper colonies, which really are concentration camps because they dare leave their homes when there's a quarantine on. I mean, we talk about China being putting the Uyghurs and others in concentration camps and slave labor camps. Man, this is going on in Australia, and now the Austrians are also hot and horny to barbed wire around people and lock them up for political purposes on the pretext of a virus.
Well, I think you touched on something very, very telling about 3 to 4 sentences ago, JJ, and that would be with, you know, the hospitals and the clinics chalking people up to the COVID. It's an old saying, but it's really true, and that is follow the money. If you're getting certain amount of money and you can get more, they're going to do it. I get a kick out of, you know, a lot of the medical care establishments. They're nonprofits, but boy, do they charge a lot of big bucks for their services and everything. So a little nonprofit establishment I went to have a fishing hook removed from my hand this past summer was right in the area of $2,000. And on top of that, the side snippers that they used was rusty. I laughed so loud in the emergency room. My wife was sitting next to me when they numbed up my finger, and he said, well, we'll be right back after it's numbed up a little while. And they set the side snippers down on the table. And I just started laughing. And my wife said, what's so funny? I said, look at this rusty piece of shit. You know, this is a hospital. You know, I figured out of that $2,000, they might have spent, you know, $29 over at Harbor Freight and bought a new side snippers. Oh, but continuing forward is that the Democrats, this is a perfect power play for them. They want to control you. And they're not going to control you, JJ. They're not going to control me. But take, for example, that I believe it was in New York City where the cops came in and busted this family having supper and, you know, show us your papers. And you got a five-year-old youngster there scared out of his wits. Well, either there's going to be two reactions to this as this five-year-old grows up. He's either going to hate the cops and not trust them and think that they're a bunch of corrupt individuals that are on a power trip, or he's going to succumb and he's going to be one of these sheeples following the dictates of Pelosi and applesauce brains and jug-eared you-know-what. You know, in Australia, for a country that was, you know, built upon penal colony, they've sure gotten to be very penalized themselves. So I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know if there's ever going to be a new normal. Americans, well, the world population, we've gotten very spoiled and very soft over the last 100 years. And people are so adverse to risk. I mean, you said back in the second grade, Hong Kong flu. Well, you know, I had kids at home. They're all grown now. But they'd come home. I mean, they were the perfect little petri dishes between the pink eye, the strep throat, the mono. I mean, everything kind of flew around the Miss Hume home. But we didn't shut things down. And it's always been like, well, if you don't feel good, you know, maybe just stay home. Wash your hands, for Christ's sake, people. It's just common sense. And unfortunately, some people get very sick, but some people get very sick from viral pneumonia, and some people die from it. Death and taxes, two guaranteed things in life. And I don't think we can shut down our entire world because of this. And, you know, what's sad is perusing through the various websites that I look at for the overnight thread is that you see so many people that have, I don't know if they had psychological issues before the COVID came, but there's a lot of people that, you know, they don't talk about the suicides and the alcoholism and the drug addiction issues because that's not pretty. That's not glamorous. We can't shut down things because of that, but we can shut down things because of a flu. It's a sad state of affairs.
It's beyond sad. It's also frightening. And you know, you talk about the drug addiction and the alcoholism and suicides and other and domestic abuse. That's got to be the body count from that alone, I guarantee you, has got to be, if ever there is an honest accounting of this, that's got to be at least by orders of magnitude greater than the real death toll and the hospitalizations from COVID and all the variants. But I mean, what you were talking about, it really struck a chord with me about training people to be, and children who are now completely, you know, children are now growing up with wearing masks, and they think it's normal. 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds are going to school if they can get into school, and we are really psychologically damaging now generations of young people, and who knows what that's going to look like, you know, 10 years from now. But it reminds me that the bigger picture of when you were talking about we as kids, we go out and we do whatever the hell we wanted to do, and, you know, climbing trees, breaking our legs, doing whatever crazy, stupid things, and we were not a fear-based society. Part of that not being fear-based, it goes hand in hand with being free. So all of a sudden, when we are relying on, or more and more we are being traumatized, or children and citizens in general are being traumatized to give up your freedom for security. Well, where are you going to go for your security? You're going to go to the government. When the government gives you your security, it gives you your daily bread when you're not working, you know, all of these things. It's trading freedom for security, and the government with this, whether it's doing it intentionally, which it has to be at this point, or it's instinctive on their part to so traumatize a population to turn to it for all of its needs. Well, that's exactly what this is all about. We're going to take a little break. I'm with Misanthropic Humanitarian. This is JJ Sefton on the Cut Jib Newsletter Radio Network. Stay tuned. And we're back. It's J.J. Sefton talking with Misanthropic Humanitarian on CJN Speaks, Episode 6, our last podcast for the next accursed year of 2021. Hopefully 2022 will prove not to be as accursed, but I have my doubts about that. Anyway, next subject we want to tackle is, and we covered it this morning on the Morning Report, Marjorie Taylor Greene is under fire for suggesting and bringing up the subject of a national divorce. And of course, the powers that be and the knuckleheads in the media and elsewhere and the GOPE are blasting her because she's supposedly promoting, you know, a violent civil war, which is the last thing she's doing. She's actually trying to figure out a way that we can separate ourselves. But it is a topic that I don't think we've ever really just until the last several years, we haven't really breached or broached. I mean, there are differences. There's always been differences and heated differences between, let's say, left and right, liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat. But the common denominator that has always been there is that for all its flaws, we had our country and we had a political system where we came to solve our differences at the ballot box and elsewhere. And that was it. I mean, we still revered and respected the country, but now we no longer have that. We have one side that hates this country and is actively promoting teaching in the schools and elsewhere that America as founded and the people who support America as founded, meaning white, Jewish, Christian, patriarchal, whatever you want to describe it, Americans are not only wrong, but we're evil and an evil to be eradicated. You know, how does one debate that or even try to reconcile that? And the answer is obviously you can't. So what's the solution?
Well, the solution, I don't want to say let it burn, but, you know, you look at different regions of the world throughout the history of the world, and you see the problems when you have a mixture of people and cultures and religious beliefs and any other little nuances. They clash. They don't homogenize properly. You look at the Balkans. You look at the former Soviet Union. Why is that such a hodgepodge? Well, for years and years and years, they had a heavy-handed central government. And it kept the Muslims in check. It kept the Christians in check. It kept the Jews in check. And then finally, I fear this is what's happening with America, is it just got too big and you can't control everything. And I get a kick out of MTG's comment about, you know, having these people fleeing from blue states to red states, wait a period of time. And I think I don't think it's practical. I don't think it's legal, but I she's on the right road. I live in very rural, northern frozen tundra land, and we have more trees than we have people. We just got our first roundabout this year. we don't even have a stoplight in this county. Okay, so that kind of lets you know where we're at in the world.
Yeah, I think Arlo Guthrie wrote a song about that, but well.
Yeah, but I've got a neighbor who he built a home. He hasn't moved up here yet. But Wisconsin, as you know, is a purple state. Most of it's pretty red, except for around, you know, Milwaukee and Madison, Eau Claire and Superior. But he's moving up here from a blue state, and he's built a home, but he's not here yet. And the fabulous Mrs. Miss Hume and I were out walking our pups one day this summer, and he was up in the up at his home, and he stopped and he said, "Well, did you run out of power the other night?" He's like, "Yeah, I had a storm." He's like, "Does that happen?" "Yeah." "Does it happen frequently?" It's like, "Yeah." You know, describe frequently. And you know, and here's a guy from a blue metro area, and he just doesn't know about, you know, the force of nature and everything like that. And then, so we're talking a little bit, and then he says, like, "Did you hear all that shooting on Saturday?" It's like, "Oh, let's see, shooting? Yeah, I think I did." He says, "Boy, they were really shooting a lot." And I said, "Oh, didn't even really pay attention to it." "Oh, my dog's crazy." He says, "Is that normal?" And I'm like, you can't come from a blue area to a red area and just expect everything is, you know, why are you coming here? Are you coming here to get away from the high taxes? Are you coming here to get away from gunfire? I mean,
He's getting away from gunfire. He's getting from wherever it is in the hood, not a problem. But he comes up into the country and some guys are shooting. All of a sudden, he's freaked out.
I mean, it's nothing. I mean, people have trap ranges in their backyard. They have pistol targets and rifle targets. And I know there's more guns in this county or in the town that I live than there are people. And it's just like, are you going to come up here and are you going to try to get guns, you know, gunfire, you know, banned unless it's at a, you know, authorized range or whatever? And it's just like, you ask these people, why are you moving? And they're going to say, well, it's the illegal immigration, it's the high taxes. You know, you don't leave California because of the weather. People leave Wisconsin and Minnesota and move to Florida and Arizona because, you know, they want to be snowbirds. They don't want to put up with the crappy winters. Well, if you're in California and you're leaving, why are you leaving? It's not the weather. So it's got to be something political, you know, whether it's the immigration or the taxes or just, you know, all the other loony BS laws they have out there. But, you know, the problem is then these people, it'll work better at the next place. And it never does.
Yes. We just socialism. The only reason socialism doesn't work is we haven't had the right people. There it is. But you touch upon it. Mark Levin calls his word is, you know, when he, because he lives down in D.C. or in suburban D.C. in Virginia, he called people locusts because they flee the incredibly high taxes and crazy left wing policies whether it's you know, New York or Pennsylvania or Massachusetts, and they come down to suburban Virginia, but they don't leave their voting habits behind, and they keep voting for the same thing that they're fleeing. So the question is now that everybody, and there is a huge mass exodus, both because of COVID and because of all the crazy policies of, well, you look at California. Gavin Newsom, I think they banned bacon or something like that. That's one thing. The gasoline is through the roof. They're trying to, you know, get rid of gasoline powered automobiles. Let alone the vaccine mandates and all of this craziness. So will people finally put two and two together and realize, you know, sort of like the famous scene from Bridge on the River Kwai when Al Guinness says, my God, what have I done? You know, he's helped the Japanese build the bridge. It's the same thing. You people keep electing chuckleheads and insane people and tyrants like Gavin Newsom and Bill de Bolshevik and Malignancy Pelosi and all the rest of them. And they're destroying California. If California were a country back when, let's say, Pete Wilson or Ronald Reagan were governor, it would have been one of the wealthiest countries in the world. And within maybe less than a generation, basically they're turning it into Venezuela. Not only because of that, but because they're importing hundreds of thousands and millions of essentially illegal and illiterate peasantry from south of the border who are not going to be embracing Jeffersonian democracy and the values of conservatism and learning English and assimilating. They're not going to be doing that. They're going to have their hand out and they're going to vote Democrat, whether they actually vote or somebody votes for them with the ballot harvesting. But that's the big question is, will finally all of this insanity between COVID and everything else, is that going to be enough to open people's eyes to say, yeah, I think it's because of the way I voted? And or at least if they're not admitting to voting for, you know, they fancy themselves as Democrats in the mold of, let's say, JFK or FDR, which I have my own problems with both of those guys. But certainly they're not like AOC, who I affectionately call Titty Kaka, and, you know, and crazy Bernie Sanders. I mean, there is a big difference between being liberal and very liberal and being essentially a Maoist. So will people now finally wake up and say, I'm not going to vote for that, but I may not vote for, let's say, a Republican, but at least I'll seek out maybe a Joe Manchin for whatever he's worth, or a, you know, now that she's proving to be somewhat normal-ish, amazingly, or Kristen Sinema, or whoever it is. So maybe there is a moderate Democrat. Well, you know, for whatever that's worth in this political landscape.
Right. Well, a moderate Democrat, I mean, they're about as common as dinosaurs, really.
Yep.
I mean, you don't see them. I mean, now my area of Wisconsin, very touristy, very outdoorsy. Most people that live up here are retired. The other group of people would be business owners and such. And then there's people like me. I'm very blessed where I have a job where I can work remote. I've worked remote for almost 20 years. And if I ever had to go into an office, I think you guys would be collecting bail for me by the end of the first week. But that said, this area has always had oodles and oodles and oodles of properties for sale. Well, once the first quarantine went in effect here in Wisconsin with Evers, he's another cadaver on the fashion of Alan Cranston, property started, you know, because people found out, well, we don't have to go into the office. We can work from home. We can move up, you know, to God's country where there's woods and water and whatnot. And I'm afraid that a lot of these people that are buying up here and they're overpaying, I mean, they're buying stuff sight unseen other than a few photos from a realtor's website. Photos never lie. So, I mean, they're buying places. They're not even having them inspected or anything. They're just buying and moving. And I'm afraid that the locusts are on their way, because most of the people that are up here, that moved up here until the COVID thing, came from blue states, but they're very, very red people. They saw that, you know, for example, Illinois is not a good place to live. And they came up here, and I deal with them in social organizations, and they're as red can be. But the people that I'm afraid that are coming are the, you know, the people from Madison. Ugh.
Yeah, I was actually
you're talking,
yeah,
Bolsheviks there.
Well, Madison actually was the seat, or one of the seats, of progressivism, which I hate that word because there's no progress in progressivism. They were one of the seats of progressivism historically in America. I mean, between them and obviously New York City and Chicago and so on and so forth. But yeah, it's just, you know, you have to, at a certain point, you have to wake up and just and smell the coffee. I think Donald Trump, with a lot of the constituents, the classic constituents of the Democrat Party over the last 50 years, amazingly, specifically Black Americans and Latinos, a lot of them are waking up to this to this insanity and saying, he had the classic line, goes, what have you got to lose by voting for me? Look what the Democrat Party did for you or didn't do for you for the last 50, 60, however many decades. You're being aborted and incarcerated and drug addicted and welfared and, you know, fatherless family into out of existence. Essentially, it's the Democrat Party, if you want to really put a fine point, not too fine a point on it, really, has committed genocide, I will say categorically, against Black Americans, whether it's in the womb or through social welfare policies because of the so-called Great Society and War on Poverty and so on and so on, and then which was glommed onto by the culture, as it were, that sort of eschews traditional American values as being somehow selling out or being white or being inauthentic. And so all of these things have absolutely destroyed them. And that is a crime that people are going to have to answer to to God for that one. But at last, I think a lot of them are seeing the light that, you know, you were talking about, you know, going back to our conversation about the whole COVID thing. I believe that was a Black family that was being molested and being persecuted by the cops in New York City when they were at an Applebee's and weren't allowed to sit down. I think that was a Black family. I know there was, if that was not the specific incident, there was another one that I had a link to in today's morning report. And Latinos, it says, don't call me Latinx or this or that. We are opposed to, you know, American Latinos that are either legitimate immigrants and have become naturalized, or those who have been here for a while saying, oh, we do not like this illegal immigration. It's destroying us and it's destroying America. So that is a big turning point, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, another reason why the Democrats were so fearful. If they lost even a certain percentage in a legitimate election of those voter blocks, they're not going to win. They will not win a national election. But this balkanization that we're talking about is really, again, we can talk about voting and we can talk about, you know, regular order and so on and so forth. But I think we have crossed a Rubicon, and I think we've moved into another era or another, who knows how you want to call it, where the future is very uncertain, and we're not, it's not at all certain of how we as a country are going to survive, if we survive. Forget about even the threats from China, Russia, and so, and Iran, and so on and so forth. We are going to be our own worst enemies. We're either going to tear each other apart somehow, or somehow in the future, which we can't know for sure, for certain, people are going to come together who traditionally did not come together before, and say enough of this. Is that going to happen in our lifetimes? As I mean, I'm 61. I think you're close by in that age range. I don't know. It's going to take a while. I mean, and all of that now goes to the school systems, where the indoctrination mills are still pumping the poison into kids' brains that America stinks, and, you know, go kill your parents because they're white supremacists and atone for your sins.
I think you're a little bit more optimistic than I am, JJ.
If that was optimistic, oh boy.
Me, Dr. Doom.
Yes.
No, I just don't see us coming together. I just don't. And I'm sorry to say that, or have to say that, or even feel that way. What started off as a great experiment, as far as, you know, a representative republic and getting rid of the yoke of the monarchy of England. What a, you know, the strongest country in the world at that time. And look what we've done. I mean, from landing on the moon, to, you know, the flights back at Kitty Hawk, all the, you know, computers and whatnot, you know, and it's just amazing what this country has done. But you call up, maybe not a small business, but you call up any medium-sized business to larger one. I mean, how many, you know, press one for Spanish, press two for English, press three for whatever. You've got, and I hate to pick on that little incestuous representative from the Twin Cities, but, you know, that Somali,
we call her Brofo for obvious.
Brofo. Well,
yeah,
you know, you've got the Somali community that they don't want to have anything to do with non-Islamic people. You've got areas throughout the United States that are Hispanic that won't learn the language. I mean, my mother would tell me about her grandparents. They came over from the old country. Mm-hmm. The only time they spoke their native tongue was on Sundays when the families would get together for dinner. And they never taught their children their tongue. And my mom said they didn't want us to know we were Americans and we were supposed to speak English. And Jewish, Christian, atheist, but if you were brought up in that Judeo-Christian type of law and order, that's what America was built on. And then you start bringing in all these other fabrics, you know, diversity. Okay, fine. But I think we as natural Americans, we're open to diversity. It's like, oh yeah, we don't have a problem with a Spanish person, you know, a Spanish speaking person coming here. Do it the right way, work hard, succeed. Hey, hats off to you. What this country doesn't need are swarms and swarms of people. It doesn't matter if they're from Central America or if they're from Africa or if they're from Asia. We cannot support an unlimited number of peasants. Might sound cold, might sound misanthropic, but we can't do it. We can't do it. We can't import all these people in here that have, at this point in time, really nothing to contribute to the society, and we just don't have the money to be open-hearted all the time.
I have no problem with immigration, legal immigration at all, but the problem is that there is no assimilation.
Correct.
That's concomitant with that. In fact, just the opposite. It is they don't want you to assimilate. They want you to, this is the, you know, it's the balkanization of the country for political gain by the political left. because to keep people miserable, to keep them down, to keep them poor, to keep them feeling as if they're being treated as second-class citizens when, ironically, they're treated better than natural-born citizens in reality, that gives the Democrat power and the American left, or the anti-American left, really, their hold on us. And as Milton Friedman said, you cannot have open borders and you cannot have a welfare state at the same time. It's choose one or the other. Not that I really want either of those things, but that is the problem, is that there is no assimilation. I mean, when my grandparents came here, when my mother, God bless her, who's a survivor of Hitler and you know, a death camp and a death march in the labor brigades, she came here and she kissed the ground that she walked on, not only learned English, but eventually became an English teacher in the hood in one of the worst schools in Brooklyn. And she saved the lives of kids, but she loved this country. My grandparents came here and loved this country. My father told the story when he said, the very little English was spoken in the house by his parents. One spoke Ukrainian, the other spoke Polish and Lithuanian. And, you know, when he came home from kindergarten one day, my grandmother, rest in peace, said in Yiddish, "So, son, what did you learn in school today?" She goes, "Ma, I learned a foreign language. I learned English." But that was it. You know, he and his siblings, they didn't speak with accents. They didn't speak, you know, they didn't speak, they spoke English, and they wanted to become American. They embraced it. Doesn't mean that they forgot necessarily. Well, some of them did. They really weren't the most religious of Jews, but they didn't necessarily forget where they came from. My mother didn't want to teach me Hungarian because it was where she came from, because it was a country that abused her. And she, in a way, I regret not knowing that language or having the language, because it is, having another language, even as one as sort of weird and obscure as Hungarian, is still valuable. But I understood the sentiment. She didn't, part of it was she didn't want my father to feel that as if he was being excluded from a conversation. But the other one was because of a hatred of her home country and what they did to her. And from then on, when she came here, she was American. She was as American as goulash and chicken soup. So there you go. So, but that's the problem. We are balkanizing ourselves, whether for political gain or for the reasons of a really more nefarious one of, like, you know, there's this notion of the Reconquista, of these radical, you know, Latin Americans who wanted literally, you know, return the West, or return all of America to some, you know, to the Mayans or the Aztecs or the Mixtecs or the who the hell knows who they want to return it to. But they hate America because they feel that they're put upon, or for whatever reasons, from things that happened, you know, 500 and 600 years ago. Funny enough, I mean, why are you blaming America? If you're at war with anybody, you should be at war with Spain. Go over there and stop Spain, speaking Portugal. Spanish, for crying out loud, and start speaking, you know, the language of Teotihuacan, or whatever language you want to speak.
And back to, I think, was the original premise, is there anything that will pull us together? And I'm like, I look back at September 11th, and we were together for what, 72
That's a stretch.
Hours?
Yeah, about.
You know, 72 hours, and then after that it was, you know, and it's just like, you know, if we can't pull together and be against terrorism, I mean, you know, Trump's ban on flights from terrorist countries, can't help that they were Islamic, but he wasn't banning Islamic people. He was banning flights from countries that support and harbor terrorists. And it's just like, and these people in Washington and you know, in other state capitals throughout the United States, they all live in their little bubbles. They all hang around with their little, you know, egg-headed political whore friends. And they don't ever, I hate to say it, but, you know, like last week or 2 weeks ago, I was doing the overnight thread. I had one night where two politicians were carjacked. And it was like, well, you hate to see that, but, you know, it's, you politicians kind of need to see what's going on in the lives of everyday Americans. You guys just live in such a little bubble. Until shit starts hitting the fan in their living room, I don't think they, you know, I don't think there's
going to
be any
ironically enough,
changes.
It's those two individuals, I think one was from Pennsylvania and the other one was from Illinois. You know, they fully supported the defund the police movement. So, you know, what comes around goes around. I'm going to take a minute break here, and then we'll be back just to wrap it up. So hang in. Okay, we're back. We're going to keep it really brief and wrap it up. Any final thoughts, parting thoughts, Ms. Hume, on what we've been talking about?
Like you said earlier in the podcast, it's 2021 has been an interesting year, and who knows what 2022 will bring. I just keep praying that, you know, everything works out for the best, and God, everything's in God's control, so we can just kind of just hang along for the ride. I don't know if that's the right way to look at it, but I'm just hoping that Americans will start coming to their senses about the COVID thing, because if we can get past that, where we can get people working and not getting government booster checks, and people start questioning the legitimacy and the knowledge of the CDC and that Fauci character, and that's the nicest thing you can call him. And we'll see. And then we'll also see if, the stupid party does the right thing and run right people and promise us things that they actually stand for in this next year with the congressional and Senate races. And we'll just see where things go.
Well, Dao Minyan, that famous Chinese polling expert, notwithstanding, we'll see what happens in 2022 and if we're still around and in 2024. Yeah, we can't. Things around us are really, it's just unbelievable. I still look at things and shake my head and go, I can't believe this is happening in the world today. But we can't know the future. We're certainly at some sort of a weird inflection point, and certainly we're the left and the globalists and the enemies of freedom. They may be strong and they may hold a lot of the cards, but they're not infallible. And so something could happen where some anonymous thing where we just can't predict the future, some event could happen, and it could spark a real revolution in a good way that throws the yoke off of this tyranny and hopefully leads to a more enlightened age. Either that or it's the long way around of quoting Tina Turner, "Will our story shine like a light or end in the dark?" So she sang it better than I did and looks better than I did. Anyway, this has been fun. Misanthropic Humanitarian, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sefton. I appreciate it.
You bet. J.J. Sefton here, ending off the last podcast, episode 6 for the Cut Chip Newsletter, CJN Speaks podcast. This is December 30th, penultimate day of the cursed year 2021. We will see you next year. Take care. Just spin me.